B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gordon Hayward gets it into Jaylen Brown. The Pacers will not foul. The clock hits triple zeros, and the Celtics, who slogged their way through an 82-game regular season of difficulty, of emotion, of disappointment, are the first team to advance to round two. They hang on and they sweep the Pacers. The final score in game four, Boston 110, Indiana 106.
It's hour two of a reentry Monday. Celtics sweep the Pacers. Bruins force a game seven. Red Sox salvage their season.
That a little strong.
Taking your calls on all of it. 617-779-0985. Headlines across Greenland, Maz, declare the Celtics a new team. They flipped the switch. NBC Sports Boston, after Pacers sweep, Celtics declare they are a changed team. Do you believe that? Do you
no.
buy that?
No, not yet.
Could they be?
Well, look, I'll tell you what. Let me rephrase. Are they changed at least a little? Sure. Yeah, they look better. They do. They look better. They're playing together. They're moving the ball. They look like a real basketball team again, and there's none of the stupidity and stoogery that was there during the large majority of the regular season. Does that mean it'll be there in the next round? No, because they never really faced any major adversity in this series. So to me, that's where it's going to pop up. It's like if they get to Milwaukee, and what if they're down by 14 in the second quarter and all of a sudden everything's not working? Now they're going to start pointing fingers again. And is Kyrie going to start going one-on-one? You're going to see the hero ball and all of that. Now, that said, I give them a little bit of credit, a smidge, for sweeping, because I thought they were going to lose a game in this series. I thought anything past five games was a win for Indiana, and they wiped them out in four. They took both games in Indiana. I thought they would lose one out there. They didn't. So good for them. It got over fast, but they haven't accomplished anything yet.
I'm sorry, Murray, go ahead.
I was going to say, I still think in this series you did see some of the red flags that you saw throughout the season, like Marcus Morris being a black hole of offense and helping to shoot the Pacers back into the game at times. And he was better yesterday, so I don't know. There's still things there. It had more to do with me with how bad the Pacers are without Victor Oladipo. And, yeah, it was a little bit competitive at times during some of these games, but they proved time and time again in the four games they don't really have anyone that can close and finish, and that's a consistent scoring threat. So, yeah, credit that they swept, but I need to see this against Milwaukee before I really buy in.
How about some of the bitchiness? Was there something on the floor with Jaylen Brown and Kyrie Irving at one point in this series? I told you I've invested very little in the NBA first round.
I mean, as did I.
I heard them talking about it this afternoon. On the midday. Oh, and I do know Kyrie's made some comments after the game that make you go, well, he's still kind of being a penis.
Oh, yes. Yeah, after game three.
Like, for example?
Oh, and I think we'll get to it. But, yeah, after game three Friday night, this stood out to me, and I talked about it on the Celtics show. He said, well, you know, next one's going to be the tough ones. I just talked to these guys and told them, you know, a closeout game is the toughest one. We know. We know, a-hole. We did two of them without you last year. We almost had a third in Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals against your old team. We know about closeout games. He just can't help himself. And I don't even think he was even trying. It just comes natural. He has to talk down to guys because he doesn't think that they're on their level.
Didn't he also say it was good to see these guys, or good to show these guys what it's like to sweep somebody? I think, again, they were talking about that in the midday, that he also had a comment like that. It was good to show these guys how to sweep somebody.
Yeah, look, I'm telling you, he's not any more likable off the floor than he has been. I like the way he played in this series, though. I'll give him that. Like, you know, and there were some plays defensively and effort plays that he made in this series, diving for balls out of bounds, keeping him in play, sending fast breaks the other way, getting his hands on stuff on the defensive end. Like, I thought he was better in that way. But again, it's Indiana. It's Indiana. So, to me, Kyrie's role is very clear. Go along with the program until everything breaks down and they need you to save their ass. Then do it. Or at the end of the game, you need a bucket and someone's going to go one-on-one. Because their best chance at beating teams is to do it as a group. We all know that.
Okay, so those are your Celtics thoughts. Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox on a re-entry Monday. In fact, Tyler in Fort Myers on the Seas. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, how you guys doing? So I just had a question. You guys last week talked about all week how you hadn't seen enough out of the Celtics. It's only Indiana. You know, what would we be saying if, you know, you look at some of the other matchups, dropping games to Orlando and to Brooklyn? We're sitting here playing a team that was in the fourth seed most of the season, and yes, they don't have their best player, but they didn't have their best player half the season. I can only imagine what you guys would be saying if we had dropped a game to Brooklyn or Orlando.
If they lost any to Orlando, I wouldn't be surprised at all. They swept the Celtics during the regular season.
Well, the entire league, with the exception of one series, is winning in 4 and 5 games.
Right.
So I don't know what, I mean, Golden State got surprised at home once. They're going to win in 5. Philly and Toronto both dropped game 1. They're both going to win in 5. So, all right, so you didn't have the one hiccup. I'll give you credit for that, but, you haven't really done anything that unusual. The entire league, the 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds are winning.
I mean, I don't know what the caller's point is. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I think he just wants us to give them more credit. Look, if this was Milwaukee and we're talking about the Bucks, I'd be saying the same thing. It's a tune-up series. It's an exhibition, the Detroit Pistons. And they actually have legitimate star power, but that's like fake. The real series starts when it's Milwaukee and Boston.
You know what? If I were in Philadelphia or Toronto, I'd be telling you the same thing. I'll allow them to lose one game in the series, probably on the road, as it was those teams' blew home games. So, fine, that's a little bit more alarming. But even though they bounce right back, they both won 2 games on the road. What's a big deal?
Phil and Malden, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, guys. 2 points. 1, Murray and Maz, you look like David and Goliath on that football picks, draft picks. And then what do you think about the Celtics' chances against the Bucks?
So I kind of like them. I kind of like that. As a Bucks fan, I'm scared. Honestly, as a Bucks fan, I don't love it. I don't love their spot against the Celtics. The Celtics they just have more options. They just have more good players. They may not have the best player, and they won't have home floor, but they've got more options. We don't have an equivalent of a Gordon Hayward or a Jason Tatum or someone like that. Middleton's good. But after that, I mean, what are you looking at? And Brogdon, I really like, but I don't even know if he's going to be back in this series. Supposed to be back at some point in the second round. I don't know exactly what that means. So I just think you have a more complete team. If the Celtics play the way they're capable of, if they play their game, quote unquote, I think they're a more complete team. I sort of like the Celtics.
I mean, they can win the series. They can win it. Will they? I don't know. Because, again, we know that there were internal problems there with the Celtics. So Middleton has given them fits. He absolutely torched them last year at times, and they left them wide open for a 3 in a regular season game here earlier in the year. I don't think it's a blowout. I mean, like, you know, typically in the NBA, you'd say a team that won 60 games that's a number one seed, they'll win in the second round in 6 max. I'm not saying that, but the Celtics have to overcome that home court advantage that Milwaukee has. Like, you know, they gave that away during the regular season. And if it bites them in the ass, I don't want to hear anybody shove Marcus Smart down my throat.
We've got Jack in Melrose on Bruins Leafs. Yes, Jack.
Hey, guys, what's up? First of all, Murray, first of all, Maz, I was the one in the pro shop that said what's up to you. And then on the Bruins, so the Maple Leafs forecheck, they're putting two of their wingers on the line, like close to the blue line. So the Bruins D are not getting a chance to get back, so they're on their tippy toes. When the center puts the puck up, D are already at the blue line, so it's like hard for them to generate offense. That's what I saw in game 4.
Okay, Jack, you gave me a little bit too much. We can just go to the numbers. You've scored 8 even strength goals in 6 games. So this thing about your advantage over their D, your advantage if you're in their zone, your advantage when you get pucks low, it just hasn't shown itself. Your power plays carried you. So if you're going to get penalty calls, and if the Bucks are going to go in the net early on your power play, it seems to me that's when you've won. And game 2 might have been an outlier because I think you did everything well in game 2. Other than that, 5-on-5, you have not won this series. You've not been the better team 5-on-5. You've been a better team special teams. And your power play. The last 2 wins that you've had in this series forged on your power play.
I mean, the Bruins' power play in this series is almost 50%. It's like 44% or something.
Been terrific. And they're hammering Babcock for it up there. He's getting all defensive about it. You know, to the point where, you know, that first power play goal they scored yesterday, Babcock says, well, that was right off the faceoff. What does that have to do with our penalty kill? That was an even draw. It trickled to the guy, you know, and the side of the faceoff circle, and he chucked it off of Hainsey's knee pad.
Right.
That was hardly like a bad penalty kill, but that's a thing up there. They're looking at him and they're saying, how can you allow 45-50% on the power play? That's how you're going to lose the series.
I mean, look, in a lot of ways, like I told you, it feels to me like the Bruins are more like the Canadians of old. You remember the Canadians used to always beat you on special teams and you couldn't score even strength against them, and they ended up winning the games that way. It feels like that's how the Bruins are going to have to win this series.
It's how they've done it so far. But again, so that when I look ahead to game seven, what am I handicapping? That the refs are going to call penalties? Because that's been clearly the Bruins' biggest advantage is their power play.
Okay, but if they don't...
And where they've gotten most of their goals. If it's a 5-on-5 game... The Bruins have gotten smoked.
Okay, so the one thing I wonder is if they're not going to call penalties, could we see the Bruins that we saw in game two? Like, you know...
I've been waiting for it, haven't you?
So I have, but, you know...
No, I think they're going to play... I think they've been cautious.
I think there was a message delivered to both teams after game two to watch out going forward. We're going to start calling more. And so all of a sudden, everybody backed off. And it wasn't as, you know, reckless as game two was. But now in game seven... Whistles get swallowed? What are you going to do, give them a lecture and don't throw your weight around?
Reentry Monday continues with your calls right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Kyrie, right hand dribble, goes past the bonus, hangs in the air. Tough ball away from the baseline is good.
He knew that play. I saw one-on-one. Saw a big line out there. You can't guard me.
I told these guys as soon as we got in the locker room, the hardest game in the series is the closeout game, especially on the road. You know, obviously, we know what's at stake. We know the amount of pressure that they're putting on themselves, and we know the amount of pressure we're going to put on ourselves to play great. And that's just the reality of it. And you just got to be ready for the runs that they'll throw at us, the intensity, make sure they're picking up the basketball, being very aggressive. And we just got to match it. We just got to be able to answer those calls, and we'll be okay.
Boy, Murray's right. He talks about the team or to the team like they've never been there before.
I told these guys there's nothing tougher than the closeout game. Really, Dad? And I know, Dad, we did it without you last year in two series. Two. We know how hard a closeout game can be, Dad. He just can't help himself. I said on Saturday talking about this, it's like, you know, when you just tell your Alexa, like, stop. Alexa, stop. Kyrie, stop. Kyrie, stop. Like, you just, I would imagine if you're Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, like, Kyrie, stop. Kyrie, shh. Kyrie, shh, shh. We know. We know about a closeout game. We did it against the Sixers. We did it against Milwaukee. Might not have been on the road, but we know. We know about closeout games. But no, please. Go ahead. Tell us, Dad. Tell us what it's like. Tell us what a closeout game is.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Hey, Siri, shut up.
Yeah. Kyrie, shh. Kyrie, stop. Kyrie, stop.
So condescending.
And he really is.
And he so fancies himself LeBron. He just so wants to be it and act it. And, like, such a nothing series. A little pushback. First round. Obligatory NBA bunny. And he's talking about, you know, I told the guys, this is when you got to dig. Because he just so wants to play the part. Like, he's playing a role in a movie.
At this point,
it's exactly what it is.
Yeah, if I'm one of his teammates, I just want the good game, see you in the next one. See you Sunday. That's all I need. Not, guys, gather around. I got something to say. Oh, here we go again. What's Dad going to say this time? I want you to know, like, it's very, very tough to close out these games. I mean, I've closed out games. I've helped close out the finals. Do you guys know what that's? Go ahead, tell us, Dad. What's it like? What's it like to close out a...
See, and this is where it could be a problem, because they'll just go, yeah, when they're winning. But when they lose and he starts pulling this crap, well, here's what we have to learn, he's going to say. Mm. You know, this team's got this issue to win. Here's what we have to get past. And they're all going to look at him and say, would you shut up already?
Kyrie,
shut
silence.
Up.
Kyrie, shh, shh. Kyrie, silence. Kyrie, shh, stop. But no, you cannot silence Kyrie Irving.
Alexa, lower.
And all that said, look, he's been really good in this series. He's deferred. I want him back. Love to watch him play basketball. Everything else that comes with him, ooh, what a pill.
He is filthy good, though, man, I'll tell you.
Okay, well, let's see how it all plays out on the floor, off the floor. Should be really interesting. When we finally get there, it's going to be about another week before we have a Celtics-Bucks game to talk about. But we can start talking about it now. It's a reentry Monday. Dan in the car. Go ahead on Celts-Bucks.
Hi, guys. Just quick question for you. As far as how the Celtics played last series, do you think it's good enough to win against the Bucks? And Maz, one other thing. Why is Betts back in the second spot? I'll hang up. Thank you.
Okay. First things first. Is it possible to tell what the Celtics did against Indiana and how that applies to the Bucks?
No. No, absolutely not. Because, again, you're not getting enough resistance there. Now, Indiana was ahead there in some of these games. And, you know, in the games in Boston, they built up double-digit leads, I think, in both of them, right? Or certainly the second one. So, but the answer is no, because they were never a threat to win the series. The Celtics knew they could turn it on and shut them down at any particular point. They knew they could do that, and they did. With the challenge comes in when you're not in control. That's when the challenge comes. Can you handle it then? And I still don't know.
I think they've built a little bit of something, though. They've built a little bit of something. And so I give them a real good shot in that series. Betts to the two hole. When did that happen?
Well, so Benintendi missed some games
there,
right?
That's right, with the foot.
Yeah, Benintendi missed some games. And so, look, I you know, you got me. I'm as perplexed as anything with what the whole logic is there. And I'm guessing that when Benintendi's in there, he's going to hit leadoff. I don't know. And honestly, I haven't put a ton of emphasis on it because I've been focused on other things. And I mean that both within the Red Sox and outside the Red Sox. So, but I think this most recent one had to do with the fact that Benintendi was out.
Got Anthony in the car on the B's. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, what's going on, boys? Going into these playoffs, I wasn't expecting Stan to try to do much on the offense. So this guy has looked like an absolute bag of crap in the defensive end. I see him continually get upended by 5'8", 5'9", guys in the corners. Looks like he's still wearing his skate guards down there. And if I have to watch him fly the puck into the stands for another delay of game penalty, I'm going to lose my flipping mind.
Okay, that was a bad call yesterday. That landed in the Bruins bench. It shouldn't have been a delay of game.
God, that made me crazy. They got so jobbed on
that. Oh, that was ridiculous. That was ridiculous. I think Char's been fine. It's a bad matchup for him. It's a bad match. Notice I said fine. I didn't say great. It's a bad matchup for him. That's a fast team, and he looks slow against that Toronto team.
There's another.
I mean, he's a +3 in the series.
But I still think overall he's value add. I don't think he's been bad.
I'm thinking about penalties that pissed me off. The one that should have been a matching, did they get on Nordstrom for the high stick?
Yes.
He got jobbed down there, too. Like, even.
He gets slew footed.
Yeah, he did. Like, those ones, too. It's like, open up your eyes. Like, there's been some bad calls both ways, but that made me crazy.
I think on Friday you were gifted 2 power plays.
Yeah.
2 soft, soft calls where you go on the power play, you don't convert them. I thought the refs really helped you out on Friday. And we'll get to the goaltender or non-goaltender interference here in a little bit. Adam in Rhode Island has a Bruins thought. Hi, Adam.
Yeah, so going into this, I would say a large majority of people were talking about how Rask was going to get pulled sometime during the series. But as it stands right now, each goal is pretty much tied in save percentage and goals against average within like a small error. But going into Game 7, I think you have to be on the Bruins' side because of their history in Game 7. And they've pretty much won every single game they showed up to. And they pretty much show up to game sevens. But my question is, what lineup changes would you put in for game 7? I'm thinking it would be better to have the original fourth line back together.
So the question I think is Carson Kuhlman or David Backes. I think to me, Wagner, I don't know what he's done to deserve a roster spot. Put him in or don't. I don't know if that matters. To me, the Backes is the one. You know, he's so limited speed wise. Some of these games, he's barely gotten off the bench, but it's a game 7. He's been in the league forever. He's been in these games and this spot so many times. Is there some value there of having David Backes in a uniform and in the lineup in Game 7, given his experience?
I go Kuhlman. I go Kuhlman. I thought he was active in that game yesterday. I'm not telling you he was great, but the games are being played at a speed that is, you know, more favorable to Toronto. And I know that, you know, now we're talking about the ice at the Garden, and thanks to Marchand's comments after the game yesterday about how the ice is soft, the pucks bouncing all over the place, blah, blah, blah. I want the speed. I want Kuhlman in there.
So Kuhlman Backus, to me, is the decision. The first thing he said about, you know, they almost always show up to play Game 7. They do. They do. The last time you played Toronto in a Game 7, you went down three separate times, and you were down going into the third period. And the time before you played in Game 7, you were down three midway through the third period. So what do you mean you always show up to play Game 7? Seems to me the last couple times you played this team in Game 7, you had to pull it out of your rectum to win the game. So I don't know what you're talking about there. I don't know. Did they show up? I guess those weren't Game 7s, but they played a deciding game against Tampa last year. Do you even remember a single thing about it? Did they show up in that one? In Game 6 against Ottawa the year before, did they show up in that one? Or did they lose at home in overtime? So I don't know. We can just keep going back through this. Game 7 against Montreal, the last time they made the playoffs, under Claude, how'd that one work out? They sucked. They got it handed to them. So there's no guarantee they're going to show up on Game 7. It feels like just a cliche to say it. Why don't you go back and actually look at the games and tell me if they quote-unquote showed up or not?
Yeah, I don't know how.
It's silly. They are not fun, those games. They are tense. They are pressure-filled. You can feel it. I'd be stunned if we see what the Bruins did in Game 2, which is coming out, you know, with reckless abandon. It's just sort of the opposite. You don't want to be the one to screw up, and it sort of permeates the building. Oh, they're in some respects miserable.
It's awful.
They're horrible.
It's a night of stress drinking. Kind of like how Friday was for most of that game until Toronto finally scored, and I wanted to kill myself.
I was going to say, you could feel a lot of it in Game 5. I think there was some of that in Game 5.
But they're going to show up for Game 7. Cliche. Sometimes they've been fine. Other times they've been horrible. Last couple against this team, they needed miracles to win at the end. So I don't know. That's just the track record. I'm just giving you the facts.
Yeah, I don't. When the caller says, you know, I think it, I feel good and it swung back. I don't know how you could say that. This series has kept going the opposite direction the whole time. Nobody has won two in a row.
On the ice thing with Marchand too, I hated that. Talk to management, talk to the staff that, you know, that can maybe deal with that. But now that that's out in the open, built-in excuse. And I hate that that's out there.
Yeah, I think he's right.
What, the ice quality?
Yeah, I think it's garbage. Look at it. It happened again, you know, and it didn't occur to me until he said it. And by the way, it's not an excuse because Toronto's got to play on it too. Okay? But the puck... The two games where the Bruins couldn't complete a pass were on the Garden ice. Game 1 and Game 5. The puck's bouncing all over the place. I think Marchand's right. I think it's crap.
We continue with your thoughts. Celtics, Bruins, Red Sox on a reentry Monday. Also going to toss for defensive linemen later this hour. We're going to have to make some adjustments. That first one was a little loose.
Yeah, I don't know if we can use the wrist rocket again.
I don't think the authorities actually, there's a Crown Vic outside the front door there, Murray. I think someone's coming to track you down after that thing. So we've been so the cleanup crews have been hard at work in here. We'll do defensive linemen at the end of this hour. Your phone's after Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And a 1-2. This is a shot to center field. Kiermaier got turned around. Backpedaling. It's over his head. Jackie Bradley into third. He stops there. Chavis rips a double.
Get that baseball. Boy, that line shot really turned Kiermaier around out in center field.
That was a rocket.
Yep.
Michael Chavis with his big first big league hit, and it counted, which leads us to the Rodenheiser take.
Yep, brought to you by Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric, serving Metro West for over 90 years, and proud sponsor of the Patriots and now the Red Sox as well. So I said this last week. It actually might have been on the Baseball Reporters. The Dustin Pedroia experiment has screwed this team up in the early part of the year. So he's back on the DL now, and if I'm the Red Sox, leave him there. And you know what? I'm happy to see them try out Chavis at second base, which is where he played yesterday. I don't know if the kid can play the position or not. We're going to find out. He turned a double play in the first inning yesterday and looked okay doing it. But the bottom line is they need some stability at second base. Some. And so if this kid is part of the solution potentially, and the other thing is if it helps put some heat on Devers at third base, I'm okay with that too. But like they need some answer there at second because the whole Pedroia thing is not working.
Okay, we continue. Red Sox on the board with the Celtics and the Bruins here on another busy reentry Monday. Stephen Quincy on the Celts. Hi, Steve.
Hey, what's up?
What do you got, Steve?
What are the odds of them beating the Bucks?
So we've just been talking about it. Do we actually have the odds? Can we Google this quickly?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
If someone wants to talk, I'll Google. But someone needs to talk.
Well, so technically, I don't know if there are odds yet because Milwaukee is not clinched yet, right?
Correct.
But there's probably speculative odds that if it is Milwaukee, and I told you my opinion last week, I think it's like 60-40, somewhere in that area. Like, you know, Milwaukee gives 60%, the Celtics give 40. But in the NBA in round two, I don't think that that's prohibitive. I think a 40% chance of winning round two in the NBA, especially when you don't have home court advantage, I think that's pretty good. So Milwaukee should still win. They were the best team in the league this year. And if they win, it's going to be because they had home court. Like that's the one thing I'm not going to give the Celtics a pass for. It's like because a lot of people are going to cite Marcus Smart as a swing factor in this series. And I'm sorry, Celtics don't get the benefit of the doubt on that after they blew home court.
Yeah, I can't find anything definitive because they haven't wrapped up their useless series against the Pistons yet.
Exactly.
Can I share something that I found while Googling?
Yes, and can we also just call one of our insiders? Don't we have a few gambling insiders here at the station?
Sure do.
They're always listening. I'll get a text shortly. Don't worry.
Thank you.
So when I Googled Celtics-Bucks odds, I came across this story that came out an hour ago from FanDuel. Celtics odds to win 2019 NBA Finals regress despite series sweep over Pacers. So they swept and their odds to win the championship went down. How does that happen?
How does that happen?
Because the NBA playoffs haven't started yet.
Well, you know the answer there. Because Vegas looked at the Pacers and said, wow, they suck worse than we thought. So the Celtics aren't as good. You know, we can't give them credit for that.
I think the Celts have a real shot. Andy in Dorchester. Yes, Andy.
Hi, I want to make a theory about how the Celtics can maybe, you know, stop the Bucks on defense. I think Al Horford and Baines, that front court is going to be really important to stop Giannis. And
well, let me cut you off. Let me tell you how you stop Giannis and the Bucks. Get back. Get back. Just get back. Okay? And the Celtics are more than happy to do this because this is, I feel like, the way they want to play half the time. Don't worry about the rebounds, offensive rebounds. Get your ass back. Because if Giannis gets going on the open floor, it's over.
You're cooked.
It's like LeBron used to be.
Yeah, that's right.
Freight train. Freight train coming your way!
True.
Okay, so get your ass back. Don't let Giannis get ahead of steam. Don't let him get to that Euro step. If he gets to the Euro step, it's over. They let him travel. He's like 7'6 and fast as hell and insane, and you can't stop him. Get back in the half court. And he's not nearly the same player. Then they have to pound it inside. You can follow him. He'll get to the line. He's not the greatest free throw shooter. He's got very little handle when it's in the half court set. So if he gets the ball outside, let him shoot. Let him shoot out there. He's not a good shooter. He'll try and pound it inside. He'll lose the ball. You can follow him. He'll get to the line. He'll shoot. What does he shoot? 70%, something like that. It's okay. It's not great. And honestly, defending Giannis, I think it's pretty simple. Get back. Don't let him fast break.
And I would beat him up in there as much as you can and hope that he's lost a little by the time you get to game 6 or 7.
We've got Eli and Haverhill on the Celts. Hi, Eli.
Hey, what's going on? So don't you think that Kyrie is a much better leader than Rondo was with the Avery Bradleys and the Jared Salgers of the world? Like, I hate the stuff that he says to the media, but at the end of the day, he's Kyrie and Rondo was Rondo. Kyrie's the type of guy that will impact the game. He'll win you the game and he'll win you series.
Oh, well, no, he's better. I mean, I don't know. I think they're both jerks. Like, I don't know who's a better leader. Rondo wasn't good enough to be the leader of the team. Kyrie is. He's just, I think, a turnoff with the way he carries himself.
So again, off the floor, I don't know that it makes a difference. I mean, I don't look at either one of them as being a leader. Well, on the floor, I'll take Kyrie as a leader over Rondo.
Of course.
Going to say, we've heard from our insiders. According to the Westgate in Vegas, the Celtics are plus 200 and the Bucks minus 250 in that second round series.
So you're solid underdogs. Solid dogs. Huh. I think the Celtics are a good bet in that series.
It's not a bad one.
I do. You're getting, I'm sorry, you're plus 200?
Plus 200,
I'll take 2-1 on the Celts in that one. Richard in D.C. Go ahead, Richard, on the Patriots draft. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. First of all, I don't think the Patriots are going to keep all their draft picks. I think they're going to trade some of these draft picks to get better position next year. But the quarterback of the future for them, I think they're going to grab him late rounds, Eric Dungy out of Syracuse. Thoughts?
Okay, I don't know the player, so I have no thoughts other than draft quarterbacks and try and get the next guy. So I don't care if it's Eric Dungy, Tony Dungy, Tony the Taylor. I don't care who it is. Go get quarterbacks and start developing them.
I can't tell. So nothing irritates the crap out of me more than some college football honk who sits here and throws out the name of some quarterback who plays in East Butt Cheek, for crying out loud. Like, and I know Syracuse is in East Butt Cheek.
Yeah, it is.
But like, seriously, yeah, the guy they're going to take is the guy who's playing at West Boise. Oh, really? And you know this. Like, it just bugs the crap. Seriously, those types of calls bug the crap out of me.
Why do you think we have the Felger-Mass big board?
I know that's why we have the big board. I'm just telling you, I'm vocalizing
it. So we don't go through this nonsense of, yeah, I watched this kid play at East Moose Ball State in Saskatchewan. Exactly. This is exactly why we do it. We let the big board pick the guys. I'm trying to find this. I'm trying to find Dungy.
I still remember the guy who called us years ago and says, yeah, the receiver they got to take is this kid, David Kirkus. They call him Circus Kirkus.
That wasn't real, was it?
It was. Oh, come on. That was a real call. I swear to God. Look it up, Murray. Look up David Kirkus on Pro Football Reference. You'll find him.
Circus Kirkus.
Seriously.
So the Eric Dungy in our Pro Football Weekly draft guide that we'll be throwing at here in just 1 minute lists 13 quarterbacks, and Eric Dungy's not on them. He's in the, and he's not among them, I should say. He's in the best of the rest category, along with Easton Stick from North Dakota State. Now that's a good name.
Isn't that where Wentz went?
I don't know. I just know this guy's
name
is
North Dakota. I mean.
Easton Stick of North Dakota State.
Yeah.
I want them to draft him just for the name.
Carry a big stick.
Then there's Kyle Shermer from Vanderbilt and Eric Dungy of Syracuse. Started for 3 years, but also had problems staying on the field. Durability is a concern. Good arm strength.
Great.
Improved accuracy every year. Threw for over 2,800 yards and 18 touchdowns in 2018. He's an honorable mention, best of the rest.
Wentz went to North Dakota State.
May not even be drafted. So we have we did offensive linemen last time. We'll go defensive linemen, a couple tackles, a couple defensive ends. It's a rich draft in defensive ends. So let's try and improve on what we did this last segment there, fellas.
Okay, I'll do my best.
And hit some actual prospects here, see if we have a chance to hit any of these guys. Felger and Mass Big Board returns on the defensive line right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
That's right. The Felger and Maz Big Board is back. And it's brought to you by our friends at the Peterson School. The best in the trades are drafted from the Peterson School. PetersonSchool.com for more information. Watch on NBC Sports Boston. The Felger and Maz Big Board will be filled out by the names that we shoot markers at the previous day. So we're still compiling today's name. We did the offensive lineman earlier. Now we're going to do defensive lineman. We'll take three interior guys, three defensive ends. We're doing it from the Pro Football Weekly Draft Guide 2019. And I just open it up to the page of defensive tackles. There's three different pages. I'll do one shot on each page. And we'll put those guys on the board. And as we've told you, six of the last 7 years, we've hit on at least one drafted player by the Patriots. This is our scientific draft analysis. Because any other draft analysis is just a waste of time.
Correct. Last year, we get the fat kid from Georgia, Isaiah Wynn.
Okay.
These guys,
Murray has some sort of pocket rocket, some sort of, what is that called?
Slingshot.
Slingshot wrist rocket, which wrist I'm not rocket, sure is
pocket rocket
legal in Massachusetts. They have
markers that they're now chucking at the board,
and I'm just going to put it up, and that's the sound that you hear. It's hitting this board, and there you go. Okay, I've skipped the first page of defensive tackle prospects because Murray, as you were telling me, guys like Quentin Williams and the kid from Clemson, they're going to be long off the board by the time the Patriots are up.
Between picks 1 and 6, those guys will be gone. Very deep at that position this year.
Okay, so stand by. Hold on, please.
So I'm going to use a slingshot this time.
Oh, great. Goody.
I'm going to try to, you know, give you a little less velocity.
Go ahead, whatever.
All right, here you go. Whoop, down and left. Bottom left. Way low.
Way, okay. Way low. That dot right down there.
But we take the closest guy.
The blue one right here?
Yep, yeah, that's it.
Okay, Ed Oliver from Houston. Ed Oliver from Houston is 6'1", 274. Short,
he'll be long gone.
No
short
shot.
Guy. Really?
Yeah.
Ed Oliver's long gone.
Mm-hmm.
Very quick, fast, and explosive. Looked like a dominating player in 2017. Very good snap reaction and first step. Great athlete for a defensive lineman. Quick hands to disengage from blocks. Flashes pursuit skills. He's long gone, Murray, eh?
Yeah.
Snap reaction, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, well. Put him on the board either way.
It's not the kind of snap I was thinking, Murray.
Sometimes we get, sometimes we come way off the board and we get it right.
That's all
right. The way it is. Hold on 1 second.
That's where I get ridiculed.
Okay, Murray. Watch this. Folks on the simulcast, watch Murray throw. He throws like a broad.
Ooh, good one.
God.
Bottom left. Bottom left corner.
Is it the orange marker?
Oh, no. Bottom right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
You see with the crease in the pages, the centerfold?
Yeah.
The first guy to the right of that, I think, is where it hit.
Okay. Gerald Willis III from Miami. Gerald Willis III. He is a 6'2", 287. He's projected in the third to the fifth round. I'll go to his weak points. Originally enrolled at Florida, but was forced to leave because of off-field issues. If your off-field issues are so bad at Florida, you must be woof. The school that brought you Aaron Hernandez, this guy couldn't make it there. And then he goes to Miami, and he did not play in 2017 at Miami because of more of the same. So this guy couldn't stay on the field at Florida or Miami.
Good value.
Do you know what kind of cretin this guy must be? Holy God.
It's a bad sign when Miami is looked at like it's, Stanford.
He also had knee surgery in 2016. He gets undisciplined and ends up taking himself out of position to make plays. Inconsistent hand use. Occasionally gets too tall. Must add some size and strength. Projected to go in the third to fifth round. Put him on the board. And we'll do one more page of defensive tackle. Stand by here, please.
Okay, I'm going old school. I'm going to just throw the marker like we used to.
Thank you. God. All this newfangled crap.
Nothing wrong with props.
All right, go ahead.
I'm trying to make it work a little
do
bit.
Do it.
Okay, here you go.
Oh, nice.
That's a bullseye.
Oh, perfect, Maz. Excellent. This one is Kingsley Keek. Kingsley Keek. Kiki.
Kingsley Keek. Do you love me?
Kingsley Keek. K-E-K-E. I don't know how that's pronounced. Texas A&M. Strong point. Size, strength, and athleticism. He's 6'2", 286. Flashes of playmaking potential. Better as an interior guy than a outside defender.
Ooh, that's good.
Long arms. The way they see it, he's clearly better inside where he has the desired size and flashes strength and disruption. That's the problem. He just flashes. Okay.
That's all right. That's my problem, coaching. Too. Been arrested for that.
Have you really?
No. Believe it or not, a clean record.
You never know.
Yeah, I doubt that.
It's true.
It's under someone else's name, probably.
Okay, so now we go to the edge rushers. We go to defensive ends. The draft is apparently filthy with defensive ends, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to open up to the first page, Murray.
All right.
I wouldn't, don't aim for Nick Bosa.
I'm not going to aim for Nick Bosa.
Because he's gone, so aim for the other side of the page.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, he's got the pocket rocket.
G. Oh, good one. Ooh, a lot of spatter there.
Jesus.
Pink.
It was pink.
Holy crap.
Go where there's the most pink.
Okay, the most pink is Montez Sweat.
Oh, Montez Sweat.
Montez Sweat.
So he's got like a heart problem. He's going to drop.
Montez Sweat. Another great name.
Wasn't he linked to the Patriots?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because he may drop because he has this heart issue.
Well, let me go to the weak points. Tall, narrow frame, and limited growth potential. lacks ideal bulk and strength for the position. Gets tied to run blocks and gives ground at times. Limited experience with dropping into coverage. That does not sound like their kind of guy.
No, in fact, sounds like he sucks.
Sounds like he's weak against the run and doesn't know how to drop into coverage. If you're going to play here, that's all you're going to do. Anyway, Montez Sweat, he is projected to go in the first to second round. They don't mention the heart condition here. So maybe that propped up late.
Yeah, it just came out in like the last week or so.
Okay, went to Mississippi State, put him on the board.
Gonna make you sweat.
I'm throwing red now. Okay. We're going red. Just so you know the color. Dead red.
Here you go, Maz. Don't hit me.
Could use a good fatty here. Oop, hit the guy just to the left of the centerfold on the bottom.
He's right here.
Yeah, him.
Oh, the names are unbelievable. Maz, how would you pronounce a last name spelled Ximines?
Zimanis.
Zimanis. O'Shane Zimanis.
He's Greek.
O'Shane Zimanis. Ximines. Old Dominion. Old Dominion?
He plays on the basketball team, too.
He's projected to go in the third round. He's a productive pass rusher. I don't even know Old Dominion played football.
And he can make baklava.
Good arm length, excellent athlete with speed, quickness, and body control. Comes off the ball very quickly, quick to read and react. Knows how to use his hands. Plays bigger than his size because of it. You know, you read enough of these bios, they're all the same. Blah, 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 blah. Hand level, knee pad, bendability, blah, 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 blah. Weak points, marginal size, play down at Old Dominion, but might have to stand up as a linebacker in the NFL.
Ooh, they could use a linebacker.
He has no experience dropping into coverage. Non-factor on some plays. Anyway, Shane Zimanis.
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 Yeah, he likes a moussaka.
Put him on the board. Okay, last page. Right. Again, edge rushers. Here's the last one of the day.
All right.
Get on with the rest of our day. Murray just throwing a football like a chick.
Here we go.
Ow!
What are we almost got a finger.
Top middle.
Top right-ish.
Got him. Got it. Austin Bryant. Austin Bryant from Clemson.
Ooh, good program.
Senior out of Clemson, tall and long with straight line quickness, some tightness in the hips. Tight hips.
I hate that.
That still slows his change of direction. Still, with all the talent on the Clemson D, he produced 16 and a half sacks the past two seasons.
Oh, forget it. They'll never take him.
Okay, Austin Bryant, put him on the board. Our O-line and D-line is done and out of the way. All the fat guys have been taken care of. We'll come back tomorrow and do some secondary and linebackers, all right?
Old girlfriend with tightness in the hips.
Okay, agenda-free. No, I'm sorry. This is a re-entry Monday. I get my slogans mixed up. Re-entry Monday continues with the calls after Murray's update. Couple open lines if you want to grab them. 617-779-0985.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.